dominican.edu. This is DJ Fighter bringing you Armored Penguins every Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. where I'll be talking about all things Armored Penguins, the club on campus, and Bellegarth, a medieval combat sport. Hey guys, sorry for the delay, but we are on now. So on last week's show, I talked about the basics of Armored Penguins and what is Bellegarth. Just to summarize really quickly, Armored Penguins is a club on campus that is Dominican University of California. We hold practices every Friday at 2 to 5 p.m. and every Sunday at 12 to 5 p.m. out on the library lawn. Armored Penguins is a part of a national organization called Bellegarth, which is a medieval combat society. In Bellegarth, Armored Penguins is considered a realm, and realms are groups of people that fight together based on geographical location. On last week's show, I also talked about fighting etiquette and the basics of different types of weapons, as well as different classifications of weapons. On this week's show, I'll be talking about blue weapons more in depth. A reminder that a weapon classified as blue means that the weapon is held in one hand and can be held in either hand depending on what you feel comfortable with, usually your dominant hand. Blue weapons also count for one hit strike, which means that it doesn't do as much damage. In Bellegarth, weapons classified as blue are usually called blues or blue for short. I will be using these terms throughout the show. Swords, bats, and flails are blues. In the next segment, I'll be talking about the rules on building blue weapons, such as length and weight requirements. In this segment, I'll also be talking about how a weapon can fail, meaning that the weapon is unsafe to use due to being improperly built or due to normal wear and tear. All weapons must go through weapons check to make sure that the weapon is safe to use and won't cause any serious bodily damage. The goal in Bellegarth is to have fun fighting and not to seriously injure people, because then you won't have anyone to fight with. If you encounter someone whose real aim is to seriously injure someone, usually you bring it up to a herald, because that's not great. It's not a good mentality to have in a sport such as Bellegarth. The next two segments will be about fighting scenarios or styles, and finally, weaponsmiths. These are people in Bellegarth who are really good at making weapons or who enjoy making weapons. And before I get started with the rest of the show, I wanted to tell a few stories about practice this week. On Saturday, a few people from the club and I went to Fresno. We drove two hours down to Fresno for a day event called Raid of Skyreach, which was hosted by Sunspear, one of the realms down in Fresno. It was a really fun event, and there was a lot of people that came out, which was really fun to see. I met a bunch of cool people who taught me a few new things about fighting, and I got to fight in a couple new scenario battles. While at Sunspear, I met Artificer, Jester, and Steel. It's really funny the way I met Jester, because we were in the middle of a ditch. A ditch is a type of battle. It's something that you typically see in medieval fantasy movies like Lord of the Rings, where there's a big open field and there's a line of people on one side and another line of people on the other side, this big empty space and like a big momentous buildup where the two teams clash in the middle of the field. That's what a ditch is. It's really fun and usually go through a couple rounds of it. And it's usually served as like a warm-up purpose. Anyway, during the ditch battle, Jester was on the other team. And they managed to get around our line and back a bunch of our fighters, which is really the goal when you're in a line. You want someone to find a hole in your line and get through it and be able to get behind a bunch of fighters and back them while they're busy fighting people facing them. So that means their backs are exposed. So I was just hanging around in the back, because that's usually what a flow fighter does. We hang around in the back to make sure that the back line is covered, so that if someone gets through the line, we can defend our people while they're busy fighting and leaving their backs exposed. Or flow fighters try to get through a hole in a line. I kind of just took this as my opportunity to back Jester while he was fighting another person on my team, but I died not even 5 seconds after Chester died, so we died right next to each other, which was really funny because, oh, I thought I was being cool, backing Chester, and then someone backed me. So here we are just kind of hanging out because it was a good ditch battle. It's kind of the ones that go on for a while because it's at a time when a lot of people are warmed up and they're in the zone and they feel really cool because they're doing good. So this conversation starts with me apologizing for backing Chester. I generally don't like to back people because to me it feels inhonorable. It's like, you wouldn't stab a person in the back if you were a decent person, but in Belle, it's perfectly all right. People don't be like, oh, you backed me, you're not an honorable fighter, yada, yada, yada. So that's generally, if you see someone's back and you go in and kill them from the back, it's generally seen as you saw an opportunity and you took it, which is good for you. So anyway, I already knew about Chester and passing because Adonis, Mowgli, and another one of our fighters, Coach, were all already good friends with him from a previous event called Harvest Massacre, which was about October. So I already heard a lot about Chester by this time, before I actually met him. And we're all in a group chat together, so he kind of knows about me, but not really. We haven't actually met before Saturday. Then Chester introduces himself, something along the lines of, hey, you're Chester, right? Because I kind of like already knew him, I saw him, and I'm like, oh, that's Chester, thinking to myself when I wasn't fighting. And then I introduce myself, and I'm like, hey, I'm Sapling, or you can call me Fighter. At which point, Chester yells, OMG, you're Fighter. The funny thing about this whole exchange was not only were we in the middle of a ditch, but also the fact that Mowgli and Ace had died, and they were sitting on the sidelines pretty close to where we were, so they witnessed the whole thing. A bunch of other fighters witnessed the whole thing as well, so it was just funny, suddenly someone explaining, OMG, it's you, out on the field when everyone is fighting. All right, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that story. We are going to take a break here. I'll be back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain. Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail? A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell? Did they get you? Walk on part in the wall for a leap. wish you were here.
Hello everyone, we're back from break. For those just tuning in, I'm DJ Fighter, and you're listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So I'm just going to dive into our next segment here. In Belgarth, there is a Book of War. There is the Book of War, which holds all the general rules about how weapons should be built, the code of conduct for fighting, stuff like that. The book is sort of like a standard, and generally the first place anyone starting out in Belgarth will look to as like a general idea if they haven't already seen someone or had someone talk to them about it. Depending on the specific weapon, sometimes there are specific rules for how that weapon should be built in order to be considered a passing weapon. There are also general rules for weapons classified as blue. But before I go over the specifications for weapons, I'm going to be talking about the anatomy of a weapon, which is kind of important to understand the rules. For the most part, all weapons have a similar anatomy, and there are modifications depending on the type of weapon. So the anatomy of a flail is slightly different than the anatomy of a sword or a bat. First, there's the core, which is the center of the weapon. If something happens with the core, your whole weapon fails. Think of the core as the spine of a weapon. If your spine doesn't work, then the rest of your body doesn't really work. The core is the support of the weapon. Cores need to be sturdy, so people usually use fiberglass or carbon fiber rods. PVC is also used, but not as often. Next is the pommel. The pommel is the bottom of the weapon. It covers one end of the core and should be bigger than the eye socket so that you don't accidentally poke someone's eye out with the end of the core. After the pommel is the handle, which is part of the core that isn't usually covered in foam. Some people make grips on the handle with leather and rope, and some people just use cloth tape. Cloth tape is like hockey tape, if anyone knows what hockey tape is. But cloth tape is sticky, and it's not like duct tape, but it is sturdy. People also use duct tape and strapping tape. All kinds of tape is used for making weapons. Some weapons have half padding or cross guards depending on the weapon. In either case, you are never allowed to hit someone with the half padding or the cross guards of a weapon, even though these parts are padded. They're just not padded in the same way a striking surface of a weapon is padded. Half padding is the part of the weapon usually below the striking surface, which is padded but not as much as the striking surface. So it's kind of like levels, where you have your handle, which isn't really padded, and it's covered in rope or cloth tape depending on who built it. Then sort of the next level, half padding. Again, it depends on the weapon. Swords usually don't have half padding, flails do. And then you have the striking surface, which has the most padding, and it's supposed to have that much padding because that's what you're hitting people with. Then you have striking surface, which has to have a lot of padding on it because getting hit by a core can bruise you or can give you a serious injury. That's because cores are made out of fiberglass or carbon fiber rods. The striking surface does make up most of the weapon, or depending on the weapon, makes up most of the weapon. So for flails, the only part, really the only part you're supposed to be hitting is with the ball. You typically don't hit someone with the half padding or the haft because that hurts, and yeah. Pole arms usually don't have a lot of striking surface. Really, you have more handle and half padding than striking surface. But yeah, striking surface does, depending on the weapon, make up most of the surface for sword, like for swords. Swords have a lot of striking surface to hit with. Then on the tip, which is optional, you have extra padding, the stab tip, to cover the top of the weapon and the core. Depending on the weapon maker, your stab tips can be really hard. The way AP makes their stab tip is really soft and really cushiony, which is really helpful because if you've ever been stabbed, it does not feel good, especially if you're getting stabbed in the gut or in the rib. On a sword, the striking surfaces are usually the sides, like an actual sword. Hitting someone with the flat sides of a sword don't count for hits, and usually if a fighter knows they hit with the flat of the sword, one go flat, don't take it, or the opponent will let the other know you hit them with the flat of a sword. Another thing to mention is that all weapons should have a cover on them. You can't just hit people with the foam uncovered because there's a lot of other materials on the weapon other than foam, such as tape, which can scratch you. So now getting into the requirements for building blues. Any blue weapon under 24 inches in length has no minimum weight requirement to meet. So you can have a weapon that's under 24 inches and be 5 ounces, and it would be the fastest, it could be a really fast weapon, and we like to call those weapons stupid weapons because it's a silly weapon to make, really, because it's 5 ounces. And while you can get a lot of speed, you would have to hit harder. If a weapon is 24 inches in length or longer, that weapon must have a minimum of 12 ounces. Blues must be a max of 48 inches in length, with the exception of a double-ended weapon, such as quarterstaves. Quarterstaves are rare weapons to see on the field in Belagorath because they're hard to use effectively. There was a fighter out at the Raid of Skyreach, Solas, who uses a quarterstave. He's really good at it, too. And for reference, for those who don't know what a quarterstave is, if you've watched Star Wars, Darth Maul's lightsaber is an example of a quarterstave. Blue weapons also have a minimum length of 12 inches plus the length of the handle and the pommel. Blue weapons must also have a max handle length of 18 inches or 1/3 the length of the overall weapon. So these are just a few requirements for building blue weapons. Again, they change depending on the type of weapon. Like, you have daggers, which are little tiny weapons, and they're not that long, usually less than 12 inches. We have one little mini dagger that has a squeaky toy at the tip because, again, it was one of those stupid weapons that we built for fun because we can be silly with weapons just because we can. So these are the general requirements for building blue weapons. I can get into specifics at a later time, but for swords, generally you have flat, an actual sword, which is, you have two flat sides and then the other sides, which are the striking surfaces. Yeah. And then flails, which you hit with the... You're supposed to hit with the back and with the bag. There are different types of flails, actually. There's bag flails and chain flails, which aren't actually chains, but sort of an equivalent to that. We're going to take a break here. Just a reminder that you are listening to Armored Penguins at Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Back from break, everyone. DJ Friday here. You're listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So when you first start out fighting in Belagarth, you first learn how to fight using a blue because it's like the foundations of to fighting with any other type of weapon. Fighting with blues first gives you the basics of footwork, stance, and how to set a guard up, which grip to use. There are two types of grips. There's hammer grip, which usually people don't like to use because a hammer grip doesn't give you as much range as a saber grip. Hammer grip, think of it as holding something in your fist. That's what it is. And a saber grip is sort of like... Your thumb is on the spine of the handle, but slightly offset, because you don't want your thumb to be right on the handle, because if your sword gets knocked back, there is a potential for your thumb to bend backwards and break, which is why it's slightly offset. Slightly offset from the weapon. And saber grip gives you a lot more control over your weapon and better range. Once you get comfortable with fighting with a blue, moving on to a different weapon set requires a few modifications. It just depends on the type of weapon you're picking up. Fighting with blue first also teaches you how to use a weapon more effectively and more safely, rather than making chopping motions, which everyone makes with a sword when they first start fighting. If you're making chopping motions with a blue, starting out fighting with a red weapon could be really bad because you're more than likely to nail someone in the head and seriously injure them. That's why when you first start out, you learn with a blue, because you are taught that chopping at someone is not as an effective way to fight, nor is it safe, versus swinging, not exactly swinging your arm, but moving your arm minimally and using the rest of your body more in order to gain a harder strike. Sword and board, which is a sword and shield, is usually the next thing a new fighter learns in Bellegarth, because you want to learn first how to use a weapon and then how to also defend yourself. I personally started out fighting Florentine, or Flo for short, which is a weapon in each hand rather than a shield and sword. When people ask me why I started out Flo, I say it's because Flo felt more comfortable for me. Armored Penguins, AP for short, has equipment on loan for fighters, and nearly all the shields we had when I was learning sword and board felt too heavy on my arm or on my shoulder after a couple minutes of fighting, which didn't feel really good, and it didn't make me feel like I was going to be effective at sword and board. So I didn't really enjoy the heavy shields, how heavy the shields were when I picked them up. So I picked up another sword and learned how to block using that sword in my left hand and attacking with the sword in my right hand. So that's how I started fighting Flo instead of sword and board. It's just a moment for me of improvising instead of really thinking, oh, it'd be really cool if I fought with two weapons. Because at the time, my mindset was that I needed something to block with, and because the shields we had felt too heavy for me. And one gets really tired of dying after a while. So I picked up another sword and started blocking with that one more. Sword and board and Florentine are just two fighting styles involving the use of blues. There are also various fighting scenarios, such as sparring single blue, which is only fighting with one weapon and no shields. That's generally how all fighters start off, single blue. There is also escalation battles, where you start out fighting with single blue, and after you die, you get to upgrade your weapon or go to your full weapon set. A full weapon set is your preferred fighting style. So for a flow fighter, a full weapon set would be two weapons. Sword and boarders get to pick up a shield to complete their weapon set. Red fighters get to ditch their blue and pick up their red weapon. So that's what an escalation battle is. Sometimes there's modifications depending on the herald, such as sometimes a herald will make it so that you can only upgrade to a full weapon set after one side has lost two or three times in a row. I recently learned sword and board because I finally found a shield that feels perfect. Our weapons maker has been experimenting with shields as he just like he experiments with weapons, but he made a very not tiny, because those shields on me basically cover my whole body, but it would be tiny on any other fighter. But it's a punch shield. Again, punch shields are the ones you hold with one hand that doesn't strap to your arm at all, and it's the kind of shield that you can move out like you're punching someone. But yeah, it's a small shield than anyone else, but a perfect enough shield for a short fighter like me. But it's a really light shield, which is great because shields can be really heavy, and as I said, I do not like heavy shields. You also, because if a shield's too heavy, you're going to start dropping your shoulder and leaving it exposed, which isn't a good thing in fighting. I think one of the things I really love about Sword and Board, as opposed to Flow, is that I can use my shield to try and pin another fighter's weapons between our shields, or just sort of shield check them, because you can't really do that in Flow. Flow is a really offensive type of fighting, which is based on the idea that you're quick enough to dive in and dive out without getting killed or getting limbed. You have to be... Most Flow fighters are really quick, and it's really a game of cat and mouse. Like, it's tag, pretty much, but with fighting. So Flow is a really offensive type of fighting. I love Flow because it's quick, but I also love Sword and Board because even if it's a defense, sort of more of a defensive fighting style, I feel more offensive because I can really get into people's faces with a shield and a sword, which is really fun when you're a short person because you're used to, as a short person and as a Flow fighter, you are definitely used to Sword and Borders getting it all up in your personal space and you trying to back out. One of our vet Flow fighters, Rift, really likes to leg people before moving on to someone else. It's just a strategy a lot of Flow fighters use. Not just Flow fighters, but sometimes it seems specific to Flow fighters. Rift definitely has the capability to go toe-to-toe with other fighters, but legging people is more strategic because then you have someone on their knees with a lessened capability to move. Plus, it's kind of hilarious when a bunch of people are on the other side are legged and hobbling around on the field trying to get to the action. There are some people who have figured out how to run on their knees, which is sort of terrifying because the whole premise of being legged is that you can't move as far because being on your knees hurts. But yeah, that's just one of the strategies for fighting Flow. Leg them and move on. At that point, if you leg them, it's not your problem anymore. Which is... Rift taught me that. I found it funny at the time. So we are going on a break here. I'll be back in a few minutes. You are listening to Armored Penguins at Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
When the day has come, that I've lost my way around.
And we're back from break, everyone. This is DJ Fighter, and you're listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So throughout the show, we talked a lot about weapons and rules about weapons, specifically about blues, not straying too far from the theme of weapons or weaponsmiths. Obviously, weapons don't make themselves, though that'd be kind of cool if they did. Also kind of scary if they did, because that'd be kind of weird. This is why we have weaponsmiths. These are people who enjoy making weapons and are usually really good at making weapons. Just a few people I know who make weapons around the area in Belgarth are Mowgli, Rao, Cord, and Bogan. I met Rao around January at Norcalia Moot. He's a really good guy to talk to. He's one of those people who does like to play around with making weapons, I guess, just like Mowgli does. And it's really fun to see how these people come up with different weapons. It's interesting to hear people talk about building weapons, because they always go through a bunch of scenarios about, oh, what if we did this? Or what if we use this? And sometimes when they come up with a particularly stupid idea for a weapon or a funny idea for a weapon, they kind of just get this look on their face, especially Mowgli, which tells you they are up to no good. It's scary because you're the one who's gonna have to deal with whatever weapon they make out on the field. Bogan is known for making a bunch of weapons. He actually gave AP a few weapons. He is the one who gave me my first two weapons. Thanks again, Bogan. I have said thanks a million times. But yeah, he's good at making weapons too. Part of like his signature or something is that his weapons are mean weapons, which means they are not nice to get hit with. I wouldn't exactly know, because I don't get hit by them because I have Bogan weapons, but I've been told that they hit pretty hard, which makes me pretty excited, I guess. I kind of just go into every fight swinging at full force because I don't want the chance that someone is going to call light on me, especially because I'm a small fighter. Small fighters kind of have this complex of, I'm going to hit hard and I'm going to wreck face so that no one can talk bad about me for being small or tiny. It's pretty amusing because AP has a lot of short fighters now. We recently had to cut down a bunch of our weapons to make them shorter and a little bit lighter for our smaller fighters, because we have an influx of short fighters and an influx of female fighters, which is something Armored Penguins hasn't seen since AP started 5 years ago. Pip, our club president, was actually, I think, one of the first female fighters for AP. Sometimes making weapons is a part of a requirement to become a certain thing in Belgarth, such as a warlord or a knight. Typically, what leads up to being a knight is a squire. Squires are apprentices to knights. Squires go through a bunch of different tasks and trials in order to become knighted, and these tasks can be identified in groups, such as tasks relating to combat or service. The idea is that knights are supposed to be well-rounded fighters, and not necessarily leaders of a realm, but they have the skills and the ability to be a leader of a realm and or start a new realm in a place where realms don't yet exist. Bogan is a squire? Yeah, he is a squire. We have a fighter down in Saracor, Torix, who is the squire. There's a bunch of them in Norcalia. And generally, you can go up to a squire and ask them, oh, how do I do this? How do I do that? Because as a squire, they are considered to be good fighters. Not maybe some of the best, but again, the point of a squire is to become a knight. So knights maybe could be the top tier fighters in the sport of Belagarth. I mentioned warlords. Warlords are leaders of a group of people, but it's not necessarily considered, like, warlords aren't considered leaders of realms or units or any other official kind of grouping like that. I don't really know how to explain warlords. It seems to be a bit of an obscure topic, but I do know that Cord is going through tasks to become a warlord, where he has to build all the various types of weapons in Belagarth. That is one of his tasks. Squires also, depending on who the knight is, what the knight asks, a squire may be required to build all the types of weapons in Belagarth, which is a blue sword, a blue non-sword, so like an axe or a hammer, to build a flail, a dagger, an arrow, a javelin, a shield, a two-handed polearm, which is long axes, flails, maces, swords, because again, swords could be considered red depending on how long you build them. Also, glaives. They also have to build glaives, a spear, and rocks. So those are just a few. Those are the weapons that squires have to build in order to become a knight. It's part of their tasks. So this section is supposed to be all about Belagarth culture. I've talked about weaponsmiths, I've talked about squires and warlords, so I'm just gonna go into friend groups, events, stuff like that. This is another one of my favorite things about, I'm not gonna say Belagarth, I'm gonna say my club, AP Armored Penguins. Because we've had an influx of new fighters, we've started this thing called Noob Squad, because I guess it's not really often that a bunch of new fighters will band together. I guess recruitment is a thing that a bunch of rooms have been working on, because we, of course, you want to get a bunch of new fighters into the sport, and I think that up till now it hasn't been like a really big thing for Armored Penguins, and it's still kind of, we're gaining momentum, which is good, but it's still not as big. But yeah, we have this thing called Noob Squad, and it kind of started out as a joke. We're just like, oh yeah, we're noobs, and noobs are generally looked down upon because they're new and they're not as great as, we're not as great as fighting as vets. So we have Noob Squad, and recently we do this thing where we chant and we just go, Noob Squad, Noob Squad, Noob Squad, and we hold hands and we dance in a circle. And on Armored Penguins Instagram page, which is Armored Penguins at DU, if you guys want to check that out, we have a short little clip of me and a bunch of other noob fighters holding hands, chanting Noob Squad around Mowgli, who is kind of considered a vet, and going, Noob Squad, Noob Squad, Noob Squad. Noob Squad is actually a thing that's been talked about on one of Belagarth's Facebook groups called Belagarth Confessions. It's a place where people submit anonymous thoughts about various people or things in Belagarth. It can get kind of catty. It can get kind of like Reddit or 4chan, really, but more Belagarth specific. But NoobSquad was mentioned on the Belagarth page once, and it was interesting because apparently there is either a bunch of other people who also chant NoobSquad on the field, or they're talking about us, which is great. It's I find it interesting and kind of hard to believe that someone would be talking about NoobSquad on a well-known Belagarth page, because for me it's kind of weird when people know me. I wouldn't really say they know me, but yeah, you kind of get the gist here. So yeah, NoobSquad is kind of one of those things. And it's not like a unit or a realm or anything. It's just a bunch of people who decided, hey, we're all noobs, let's stick together because that's what we need to do. Protect each other and be each other's support system. Kind of just like any other regular friend group. There's also my favorite, Lucky Squad. Lucky Squad consists of Adonis, Mowgli, me, Jester, Coach, and two of our other fighters in our club, Toph and Del. The story, apparently Lucky Squad started out back in Harvest Massacre because a bunch of them got really bored. I wasn't at Harvest Massacre, so I wasn't part of original Lucky Squad. But Lucky Squad started back at Harvest Massacre when a bunch of our fighters got really bored and decided, let's take a drive. And originally, they were supposed to go to Starbucks to get hot chocolate for one of our fighters, and they ended up staying out way past like 3 a.m., and they went to Starbucks, and then they went to the grocery store Lucky, if anyone knows what a Lucky superstore is. Apparently there's not many Luckies out in SoCal or wherever Harvest was, but yeah, Jester was really he was really surprised because he didn't know that Lucky stores existed. It's kind of like, it's one of those moments when, let's say, a foreigner comes to America and they're learning all these new things and she's like, oh my gosh, that exists? I didn't know that exists. That's kind of cool. So that's how Lucky Squad got its name, because of the store Lucky. And when they were at Lucky, they asked a bunch of people to take their picture in front of Lucky. Which, they asked just, apparently these people were foreign, they were from Asia, so just imagine not living in America, being asked by a bunch of people, can you take our picture in front of this store, because apparently they lied, and they were just like, we're foreign, and we've never seen one of these. That was a pretty, eventful night for Lucky Squad. Apparently, they came back at 3 a.m. and they had to wait for the gates to open, because at events, you go through a gate that gets locked at a certain time. It's not like you can't get back in, but you do have to wait for security to come out, and apparently a bunch of people were waiting for them. But yeah, they got back to camp and they were not sleepy, and they decided they were going to hang out at the fighting field and at a lake nearby, and they decided, let's army crawl / twerk across the field all the way to the lake, because they didn't want to be seen by security or something like that. But yeah, that's That's Lucky Squad, and apparently I have to do the initiation of army crawling across a field and twerking, which should be so much fun. Some cool things in Belagarth that people can check out. There is Tussles, which is a YouTube group. I don't know who runs it, but basically this person or these group of people film a bunch of fighters duking it out. And it's really cool because they use a GoPro, I think, and they get some pretty insane angles on fights. And it's such a fun thing to watch because there are incredible fighters who do all these cool spins and you're just like, how did they get that shot in? I'm gonna watch that again. I still don't get how it's that moment where you're in awe of the skill put into making these videos, as well as the skill of the fighters who are portrayed in these videos. They filmed a bunch of Battle for the Ring. Just go check them out on YouTube. It's Tussles, T-U-S-S-L-E-S on YouTube. If you guys want to learn more about Belagarth other than me talking about it for an hour every week on Thursdays from 6 to 7, there is geddon.org, which is the Belagarth wiki. You can learn about various people, realms, events, how to be a herald, the type of equipment a fighter would use, how to build things, scenario battles. The Book of War is also present on the Belagarth wiki. But yeah, geddon.org is a really good resource for Belagarth fighters, even if you're not a new fighter. It's geddon.org. That's another resource for Belagarth fighters. What else? You can look up fighting tutorials on YouTube, actually. There's a good fighter who teaches on YouTube, Bokhtar. It's Bokhtar. He recently, did a video on baiting that was really informative. Usually I don't watch fighting tutorials because I'm more of a person who learns through someone physically being present with me while I'm learning and showing me and then executing the things, which is a lot more difficult to do if I'm just learning through a video. But some people find videos more helpful. You can also check Do You Even Rift Bro at .blogspot.com. This is Rift's blog where he talks about various things in Belagarth. I have yet to check it out, but yeah, it's kind of a joke because if you know the meme Do You Even Lift Bro, we changed it to Do You Even Rift Bro. So that's just another thing you can check out. Tussles, the Armored Penguins Instagram page, which is armoredpenguins@du, Tussles on YouTube, and geddon.org, and as well as Rift's blog, Do You Even Rift Bro, are just few things you can check out related to Belagarth. There is a whole host of other websites you can check out, but these are a few that I like to look at, / just for fun. Yeah. So, I guess that's all for tonight. Just a reminder that Armored Penguins holds practice every Fridays at 2 to 5 p.m. and every Sunday at 12 to 5 p.m. out on the library lawn. This is DJ Fighter bringing to you Armored Penguins, where I talk to Armored Penguins and Bella. every Thursday from 6 to 7. I hope everyone has a good night and a good weekend. This is DJ Fighter.